You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, good evening, young lady. I have been looking forward to doing this all day today from work, sitting out on the patio with a gorgeous Texas sunset and having a beer right now, but I'm going to be switching over to coffee and some carrot cake, and I thought maybe we could talk about some national events.
There certainly are enough of them to talk about.
Well, let's just start out how the game begins, all right? And that's Attorney General William Barr telling everybody, telling the Senate, telling the Congress, he's assembled a team, and he is going to start investigating how the whole special counsel Robert Mueller thing began, how the FISA warrants were developed, how, you know, whether or not there was spying on the Trump, campaign and President Trump. What's the truth behind that? And I'm telling you, I think some heads are going to roll.
Well, and I really hope that he gets back into Hillary's emails and how those disappeared and how the phones disappeared and how they, you know,
the computers disappeared.
Yeah, they whitewashed all the texts and all the things that they did to hide everything that they did. I mean, that still really bothers me. And I think that it was just absolutely illegal. And talk about obstruction of justice. Oh, my goodness.
He's already told the lawmakers that he's going to start at the summer of 2016 during the beginning of the campaign. And he might even go all the way back to 2015. And that means trouble for the deep state, okay? I think the people, if I were some certain people, the Lisa Pages, the Jim Comeys, our intelligence, our CIA intelligence director, our NSA intelligence director, Peter Strzok, all of these guys, I would be shaking in my boots.
Well, and they should be because, you know, they deserve to be looked at as closely as they were looking at the people that they were looking at. So turnabout is fair play. Now, here's what I hope out of all this, Ron. I hope that justice gets done one way or the other, however it should be done. But I also hope that he has the class and the smart attitude of doing this, to just do it and be quiet about it. I don't want to hear, and America doesn't want to hear, this whole Mueller circus that we've had for the last couple of years that's on the news day and night and day and night, and the country can't get on with their lives and doing what they do because we're always watching this whole Mueller thing. And I just want him to do his job and keep quiet about it. I don't want to hear it on the news. I don't want to hear it play by play. If somebody needs to be brought to justice, then at that point in time when you determine it, come out and say it.
Well,
in the meantime, do it behind the scenes.
Okay, no, and I don't disagree with you one iota. And I do think the American people want to see this investigated. I want to take all the politics off of the table. Let's just talk about the Bill of Rights and specifically the Fourth Amendment that deals with searches and seizures and unreasonable searches and seizures. And that's my area of expertise. And I'm going to tell you that the American people should not tolerate spying. In other words, and I think Barr said it right when they asked him, well, what does spying mean? Well, you know, really, spying is spying, but I think he said it very succinctly, and I think he said it very accurately. Unauthorized surveillance against American citizens absent probable cause. Okay? And I think that that's very important. Look, I wouldn't want those people spying on me. I don't think you'd want those people spying on you and other good Americans. For God's sakes, we need to be protected. And if the very people that are entrusted with protecting Americans and our civil rights, meaning the United States Department of Justice and the FBI, if we can't trust those people, just who the heck are we supposed to trust?
Well, that's absolutely right. So, like I say, I'm really glad that he is the Attorney General now. I have a lot of confidence in him. I really liked the way that he presented himself in front of Congress and the Senate. He's well-spoken. He's thoughful. He's
at least done this job before, remember?
Yeah,
he's done
sure.
this job before, so he's no rookie. Now, as much as I have had a distrust of Mueller, just because of his background, and what caused me to have the distrust is, number one, they picked him, but he picked Comey as his, you know, next in line, but he just really put a ton of Democrat FBI agents on his team and attorneys on his team. You know, I would have liked to have seen sort of a 50-50 thing.
Sure.
And when I saw that, I said, oh, my God, you know, here we go, you know, the big setup. But I will say this about him. He kept his mouth shut during the 2 years
did.
Of investigation. So,
but nobody else did.
But nobody else. Well,
right.
Wait a minute. Let me. His team at that particular time, until the conclusion of his investigation, I don't think there's one bit of proof, Linda, that any member of his team had ever leaked anything. They're just leaking it now, okay, because they're not happy. But it was everybody else getting information. It was, you know, Congress people. It was Senate people, our lawmakers, you know, people in our intelligence division, certainly the CIA director. All of these people were speaking out of turn and speculating and leaking, okay? And I agree with you. We don't need any of that. Let's have a nice, thorough, comprehensive investigation. Let's keep it underneath the radar screen. And when it's done, it's done.
Right. And you know what? One thing that we've seen for years and years and years, Ron, is things litigated in the press. And they're always wrong. I mean, they're just virtually always wrong. And there have been enough times where there have been cases about different things in the media that we happen to have firsthand knowledge about. And we're just incredulous at the reporting of them being as inaccurate as it is. So, yeah, I want to go back to a normal news cycle, not this everything about Trump all the time. Let President Trump do his job. Let Attorney General Barr do his job. And, you know, let's just hear about it at the end.
I agree with you. But speaking about litigation and yes. litigators, how about the news about Michael Avenatti, okay, a potential Democratic presidential candidate, and once the attorney for Stormy Daniels against President Trump, how about him getting indicted this week on some huge charges?
Well, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, that guy was a flim-flam guy from the start, I felt like. Although they're still investigating Trump on that, you know, trying to get him with, illegal...
Oh, paying off one
yeah,
of the
I mean,
Playboy Bunny models.
I mean, you know, if... I don't know. Paying somebody to be quiet is not a crime. Paying somebody to do it for other reasons would be a crime. So I just don't see a crime there. They're not going to get anywhere with that. But Avenatti was just a piece of work to
start
with.
Well, he's just a total lowlife. And the federal prosecutors in New York have accused him and actually indicted him of a shakedown. You know, with Nike.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I 25 yeah.
million. Mm-hmm. Not some small shakedown. A $25 million shakedown. Then plus wire fraud, bank fraud, all sorts of interesting things that, you know, I just kind of want to mention to you. And, you know, you and I have been working overtime on our taxes, because we have different companies, and trying to get our taxes done and working with our accountants and getting the paperwork. And I mean, everybody's in the same boat here. You know, we have little cardboard boxes full of paperwork and we're pulling out, you know, pulling out these different documents. And
I just like to bring up, Ron,
no, I know
no
you
way,
are.
There's no way about it.
Well, Linda, I'm there to support you. That's my job. Hey, listen, I flunked every math class I ever had. You think I'm going to get involved with our taxes? I want plausible deniability here.
I was surrounded by papers, like up to my ears for
days. I felt so bad for you. But wait a minute. Okay, so you think you have problems. Let's go back and talk about Michael Avenatti, because this guy had been making millions and millions of dollars. He's got his own $4.5 million corporate jet. Oops, not anymore. Oh. IRS came in and put the habeas corpus on it. But he failed to pay millions and millions of dollars in taxes. You know, I'll just give you an example for a minute. In 2010, they can prove that about $18 million went through his bank accounts, his various bank accounts. $18 million. And you want to know how much taxes he paid on the $18 million? Like zero.
Oh.
Okay. Oh, hadn't paid.
How does that work?
Hadn't paid taxes at all. You know, I think it was in 2009, the guy made $1.9 million. Okay, that's, you know, that's okay. But he owed about $570,000 in taxes. How much money did he pay? Zero. Okay. And look at the media darling that he became, because I think he had, I don't have the numbers, but I'm almost positive that, I mean, he was on every single night on two or three different cable channels, CNN, MSNBC, NBC. I mean, he was making the rounds, and he made over, in a very short time, over 100 appearances on television talking about Trump and talking about all of this stuff. Well, Trump hasn't been indicted, right? But Michael Avenatti, he's looking at, hold your breath, 100 years in prison. You know what I think? I think he's going to cop a plea. That's what I don't think this is going to court, except him showing up. And think of the legal fees now. You know, an attorney having to hire other attorneys to defend him. And it looks to me that the FBI and the IRS have gotten federal prosecutors, especially in New York and also in California. I think they put together a pretty damn good case. You know, to indict, they at least had probable cause, because that's the standard of proof.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? In life, what goes around comes around, I find. So, you know, speaking of another high-profile guy, the city of Chicago is suing Jussie Smollett.
Oh, one of my favorite false reporters.
Yes, and they're really upset that this whole thing got, you know, washed away like it did. And they put in 1,836 hours of overtime in 2 weeks with all the officers that they had investigating this case.
Well, I can tell you, just right off the bat, from doing overtime myself on many, many occasions, I'll bet you to score up, how many, was it 1 week?
1,836, 2 weeks.
2 weeks? I'll bet you they had a minimum of 20 investigators working that case. That's just a minimum. Just do the math.
Oh, I know.
Okay, do the math. 1,800 hours, and then, you know, you figure maybe 3-4 hours per investigator, you know, of overtime per day, besides your 8-hour or 10-hour shift. I don't know if they have a 4-10 plan or a 5-8, but just do the math. I'll bet you there were at least 20 investigators involved in that case.
Well, they filed a lawsuit against him for $130,106 to reimburse the city for the time that they spent. And in this lawsuit, it really details, it parallels what the criminal complaint was.
Right, that they took to the grand jury. Sure.
And the thing is, they had so much evidence. And I still hear people say, Ron, that this was a setup and that he was, you know, discriminated against because he's black, because he's gay, whatever. They had so much evidence, and they had so many different camera angles of cameras that were on the street and near his home. And You know, they have the statements of the two guys. They have checks. They have
They have a lot of forensic evidence in this case.
So, you know, I have a feeling that they are absolutely going to win that lawsuit if there's any justice at all.
Well, can I speculate for a minute?
Yes, please
okay.
do.
Okay, having worked with scores of attorneys, lots of them, hundreds of them, I will tell you, just do the math. Okay, so what the city of Chicago is asking for is $130,000. Would you like me to tell you what I think his legal fees would be in defending this? $200,000. I think that's a minimum. $200,000. Because he'll probably have 2 to 3 attorneys. Just think $400 to $600 an hour, billable hours, and they're going to be working the hell out of this. And the thing that Smollett has got to really worry about, and you know this because we do it all the time, the discovery process. Because if it's a civil case, they can pretty much go anywhere. They can grab his bank records, they can grab his phone records, they can grab, and I'm sure that Chicago PD had already done search warrants for all of his computer downloads and his phone and the two guys' phones. We already know that. And all the bad stuff is going to come out about Smollett. So all this posturing, I'm innocent, I never did anything about this, believe me, and it'll be a public trial. So all the media is going to be in there, TMZ and you name it. You know, all the magazines, People Magazine, everybody's going to be in there, and they're going to hear all of the dirt on Smollett. And you know what? If I was an actor and I had a hard time just trying to get my job back so I can be back on that Empire series, I would not want this out in the public. I would want this to go away. And I'm thinking, now I could be wrong, maybe we could bet a buck on it, but I'm thinking after push comes to shove, he's just going to pay the money and he's going to go away.
Well, I think that that would be the smart thing, although he hasn't made any smart moves yet on this. So, you know, I mean, that's his choice, but I agree with you that it will be much more costly than the $130,000.
Oh, no, of course it is.
Yeah.
It's absolutely going to be. But you know what? If I was to speak to Rahm Emanuel and the city attorneys for the city of Chicago, I would say sue him in the settlement, okay? He's got to pay the money, but he has to make a public apology and an admission of guilt, okay? He's got to do that, all right? And I'm sorry, Jesse, you screwed up. And the grand jury said you screwed up. And, just to let you know, Jesse, when you get into civil court, it's not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's 51% or more, just a preponderance of evidence. And here's a little tip for you. If the grand jury already indicted you, they are already over the 51% for probable cause. Settle the case. Pay the money.
And move
you
on with
life.
You
were stupid. And that's exactly right.
Yep.
And move on with life. How about our first cup of coffee of the evening?
I will make it.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to responsetoactiveshooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, responsetoactiveshooter.com, and be safe out there.
Well, you have your toffee nut coffee and some carrot cake, and you also have the dog's face in your lap trying to get your carrot cake.
Well, that's it. The dog is literally putting the arm or the paw on me to get some extra carrot cake. I mean, come on now.
So she wants her evening treat also.
Well, I appreciate that. But anyway, it's all tasting good. So Julian Assange is indicted and arrested, and I can't say that he was yanked out of the Ecuadorian embassy, but I saw them carrying him out, and he wasn't a happy camper.
He was saying a few unprintable words, I guess, and he looked interesting, right? He had the big full beard and the long hair, which, I mean, we've seen him in a number of different looks over the years, but I don't know. He looked kind of crazy to me today.
You know what? And you made an interesting remark this morning when we were watching them drag his rear end out of the Ecuadorian embassy. And that is said, he looked a little bit Howard Hughes-y.
Yeah.
And if you remember the history of Howard Hughes, right, and what he looked like, you know, at the end, I saw it. When you said that, I looked at Assange, and he's got the big grizzly beard, and his hair went way too long. And I said, man, that's not the guy that we have seen before. And I think even a couple of the Fox reporters that knew him and had spoken with him numerous occasions said, man, that's not the same guy that I know and I spoke with.
Well, you know, it's got to be difficult at best to live in the Ecuadorian embassy for years on end. I mean, years. And you can't even leave.
Well, didn't you say that maybe you thought that he was getting a little bit 5150 and the Ecuadorians just had enough of him and just basically kicked him out of the embassy, which they have a right to do, even if somebody, you know, claims sanctuary. They can kick him right out of there.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought that I heard, and I haven't read fully, but I think that the story of how America is getting him is an interesting story.
I'd like to hear that. Find out about that?
You know, the charge against him, don't forget, him being a journalist, you have this whole First Amendment right of being the press, right? The freedom of the press.
Got it.
And you have this whole thing that you don't want to cross over into making accusations, and then you have the First Amendment in the way. But one of the things that he did, which happened back in 2010, was that he and Chelsea Manning tried to come up with a password, to hack a password, so that they could hack into the military computers.
Right, and wasn't Chelsea Manning in the Army, and he, now it's a whatever it is at the time now, wasn't Chelsea Manning at the time some sort of intelligence?
She was in Army intelligence.
There you go.
Right.
That's the key.
So they wanted to log onto a Defense Department computer anonymously. And that, by the way, is a crime, no matter how you look at it. That has nothing to do with the First Amendment. So the United States and President Trump had 8 years in which to look at doing something about this. Notice that Obama did nothing about it.
Oh, that was... That made so many people angry. That in the Burkhalt case, right?
Yes.
Remember that? The trading him for the five big wig terrorists. So the United States indicts him, right? Arrests and indicts him.
President Trump started looking at this when he came into office, and he waited a while to see if, you know, they could get some sort of an indictment that was narrow enough to not infringe on the First Amendment so that they didn't have that in
the way. Which is tricky.
Right, which is tricky. And actually, under Jeff Sessions, they kind of started looking at this situation. And now we are at the point where that 8 years is just about up, and the United States filed just under the wire an indictment against him for...
conspiracy to commit computer intrusion.
Right. So it's a cyber charge,
right?
And it's a clean charge for extradition purposes.
What does that mean?
It means that it's not muddied by the First Amendment.
Okay.
So it's a charge that is a good charge both in England, in the UK, and in America. So the UK would not have handed him over if they felt that the charges brought against him were politically motivated.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think I am, but the Ecuadorian embassy was in London, right?
Yes.
That's why Great Britain was involved in this.
So yes.
It wasn't in Ecuador.
Correct.
It was in London.
Yes, right.
Okay.
So he was taken out of that embassy, and he will be handed over to the United States now, because the charge is not a politically motivated one. It is a crime in both countries.
Okay.
So they have 60 days to present a final case to the authorities in Britain, and the grand jury is still active, and Manning is also still being held in jail for refusing to testify. So we will see what's happening.
Well, and of course, one of our favorite freshman Congress people, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, was making some comments today, supporting, Julian Assange. And I tell you what, I take exactly the opposite position, because Assange and Chelsea Manning really put this country and our operatives at severe imminent risk. Okay, and we don't even know the level of damage that these two people created. So these are not journalistic heroes, First Amendment heroes whatsoever, because they gave away troop movements that we believe Al-Qaeda got. They gave away the names of Iraqi operatives and Afghani operatives that were working for the United States in infiltrating Al-Qaeda, which later turned into ISIS. And so they took all of our operational files, and particularly those sources are assets. And again, the Iraqis and especially the Afghanis that were working with this, and they put them out all over the internet. Can you imagine coming home and, looking on television or looking on the internet or whatever, and you've been outed and you're a secret operative of the United States government? Your whole family's going to get massacred. You're lucky to make it home and get your family together, for God's sakes, and leave the country.
Right. Well, Chelsea Manning is a horrible person. She already had given WikiLeaks hundreds of thousands of classified records, which included exactly what you're talking about. Complete databases, including 90,000 reports from the war in Afghanistan, 400,000 reports from the war in Iraq, and 250,000 State Department cables. And that is what Chelsea Manning gave to WikiLeaks, which is why Chelsea Manning needs to be prosecuted, to the nth degree.
But where Julian Assange comes into this is that he's the person that helped Chelsea Manning to crack the password that allowed her anonymously to gain access into those computer intelligence data files.
Well, they tried to, and there's no allegation that it actually happened.
Oh, yet. Okay. Stand corrected.
But she had already gotten all of these documents I just mentioned, in addition to trying to crack that password, which they did together. So, anyway, Chelsea Manning is already in prison for a good long time. I think she has something like 35 years to serve. So, Assange has done a lot of damage to a lot of people. And, there's a part of me that I find him a really, really interesting guy. I actually think he's brilliant.
There's no doubt.
But you can be brilliant and be brilliant on the wrong side of the law, too.
Well, yeah, you just can't do, even though, you cannot hide behind the First Amendment and do the things that he and Chelsea, there's the dog, and do what he and Chelsea Manning did. You just can't do that. You cannot put lives at risk. When you give away our battlefield operational plans and you give away and out basically covert operatives, Afghanis and Iraqis that are trying to work with us to save their country, I'm sorry. I think in the old days they'd take him out and shoot him once they were convicted. To me, well, it's treasonous.
I agree. And, okay, you know,
but
back,
he's not an American citizen.
No,
right? Is he? Is Assange an American citizen?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No, but you know, I mean, the thing that boggles my mind is where was President Obama in all this? What did he do about any of this? He could have done the same thing that President Trump did a long time ago, but he didn't do it. So, you know, I mean, again, I have to hand it to President Trump for having the moxie to do the things in life that need to be done and just take care of business and take care of the interests of the American people.
Yeah, and you know what? And these are difficult things to do. Okay, when everybody wants to look the other way and everybody, you know, wants to put these things under the rug, or in Obama's case, let guys like traitors like Burkhalt completely off the hook and trade high-level al-Qaeda, you know, terrorist commanders for this guy. And then put him in the, you know, the Rose Garden in parade.
Oh, I know.
Oh my God. Parade the family, which is a total train wreck, in front of the American people, like the kid was a hero. Oh my God. You know, it just really makes me mad. But you know what? Speaking about President Obama, did you hear that one of his former White House counsels, Greg Craig, who at that time, when all this stuff went down, and I'll explain it, was an attorney, a counsel for President Obama. He just got indicted this week on two counts of making false and misleading statements to investigators. And do you know what investigators he made the false and misleading statements to?
No.
Mueller's. Mueller's. So Mueller's guys actually turned him in. Okay, so what did he make false and misleading statements about? You know, it goes back to the Foreign Agents Registration Act. Okay, isn't that the same kind of scenario that General Frank...
General Flynn?
General Flynn, I'm sorry, got indicted in. Okay, because I believe Flynn was doing some negotiations, not for Trump or anything, all on his own. But I think he was working for a company, and he was doing negotiations with the Turkish government. And when the investigators, Mueller's people, asked him, you know, what his involvement was with that, I think he might have denied it. So this is, you know, sort of the same thing with attorney and former White House counsel Greg Craig got involved in it and is getting in trouble with now.
Well, it's interesting that I think that that's the first Democrat to yes, go down for anything at all. And believe me, I like I said earlier, I think that there's going to be a lot more, and I hope so. But again, I hope it's kept on the lowdown until something actually happens. I don't want America to have to live through the play-by-play again of all this.
Right. And, you know, I just want to add that from everything at least that I've read, it wasn't just the prosecutors. They took it to the grand jury in a U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., in the District of Columbia. So he was judged at that time, at least for probable cause. That's what you need to indict. We've talked about this many times. But by a jury of his peers.
Yeah. Well, I want to give you another piece of news that don't know if you've had a chance to catch up on, but I guess it was a pretty nip and tuck election in Israel this time, and Netanyahu pulled it out, and he will have an unprecedented fifth term as prime minister.
Correct.
There. So I'm really happy for that. I like him. I know that they still are talking about indicting him on some things. And, you know, who knows? I mean, they talked about indicting Trump for the last 2 years, too. So I don't know what's right and what's wrong. But I know that he's been a good friend to us in the United States. And now I think we're better friends with them than we were under the Obama administration.
Oh, my God. They hated Obama. And Obama hated them.
Yeah.
We weren't getting anywhere with the Israelis in the Middle East during the entire Obama administration. And, you know, I want to just – I have some personal insight into Benjamin Netanyahu. I've got two of his books, and I want to say that this man has been a hero of Israel ever since he was a young man. He was he went all the way up the command in the IDF, which is the Israeli Defense Forces. And I don't think a lot of people know this. You kind of have to be, you know, our age and then also, you know, kind of be a student of terrorism. But do you remember, Linda, the raid on Entebbe?
I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, I don't know if you know this, but there was only one fatality on the commando force, the Israeli commando force that they flew over there to Africa and Uganda, and to free all those Jewish hostages, which were going to be executed. Okay. And the only fatality was the commander of the force. And do you know who that was?
His son, was it not?
No, his brother.
His brother.
His brother. And so anybody that really wants to read a great book, the raid, excuse me, The Raid on Entebbe, and then also you should read the book that Netanyahu wrote maybe about 20 years ago on terrorism. Absolutely fascinating book. And the man is so intelligent. He's one of the best speakers out there.
He really, really is. And he is really intelligent. And you know what? What's so interesting about him is, you know, he's a guy, and you almost can compare it to President Trump in some ways. I mean, he's so embattled. He's got this little teeny tiny
country
piece so
completely
of the world.
Surrounded.
Yeah, completely surrounded. And just faces, you know, not just verbal enemies, but physical enemies day in and day out. Rockets flying over the fences and, you know, all kinds of things going on. And, you know, he stands strong and he stands his ground. And I just have to admire that in somebody, no matter what.
And you know, I've seen a lot of speeches in the UN, but the speech he gave this year or late last year, I can't remember exactly when it was, I have to tell you, it was one of the best and most articulate speeches I have ever heard any world leader give at the United Nations. I tell you what, it bears attention, and you know, if somebody would Google it and listen to that speech, they wouldn't help but be impressed.
Yes. Well, I have to say one thing before I get you a second cup of coffee that I just think was hilarious. You know, when William Barr was talking about that possibly there was spying on the Trump campaign, somebody in the news media asked Comey about it. And Comey has that look that only he can get on his face. And he said, I just wouldn't have any idea what you're talking about, so it's hard for me to comment.
I gotta tell you. you know, and he says it with such a straight face. And, you know, I just think if there is a God up in heaven, he will guide Attorney General Barr and his investigative team to take a really close look at former FBI Director James Comey. And I, in my personal opinion, right, commentary, my personal opinion, liar, liar, pants on fire, okay? And I'm ready for that cup of coffee.
He still has no idea what you're talking about.
Well, he will once he gets indicted.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, we're rounding the bend with our last cup of coffee, and I'll tell you what, I've got a frost my socks moment here that I want to share with you, and you know all about this law in California, this AB 392, co-authored by Assembly members Dr. Shirley Weber from San Diego and Kevin McCarthy from San Diego, two uber-liberal Democrats that are seriously trying to handcuff police officers in the state of California with this very dangerous assembly bill that unfortunately just passed through its first committee today.
Which is just an insult to all officers.
So let me just explain it to you. I don't even need to really explain it to you because you know it. But it's the AB 392 allows police officers to use deadly force only when necessary to prevent imminent and serious injury or death, as opposed to reasonable force. Okay, now some people that don't understand police work and they don't understand imminent threats and they don't understand the significant and dangerous challenges that police officers face every single day in every single city in America, it's a big deal. Okay, so here's a great example. The new rules would restrict police officers from firing their weapons except when non-lethal alternatives are not available. Oh my God, right? I mean, that forces them to look at no matter what the circumstances are and how imminent the threat is. Well, first we have to use a taser. Guy's running at you with a knife. Oh, well, you got to use a taser. Oh, you got to use a beanbag round. You know what? Neither one of those things.
Guy's got a gun pulled on you.
Right.
And by the way, this kind of a law is made by and voted on by people that have no idea what they're talking about, because things, as you always have said, are rapidly evolving and uncertain. When I say rapidly evolving, Ron, things happen in split seconds of time. It takes, you know far better than I, how many seconds to pull your gun?
Oh, it takes depending on the holster, right? It could take a second and a half. It could take 2.5 seconds to pull your holster, your gun out of your holster. It depends on what kind of holster you have.
It depends even if you have a holster.
And you want to know something? You're exactly right. Or your holster is concealed under your jacket or clothing because you're a detective or you're an undercover officer.
No, I'm talking about a criminal.
Oh,
okay,
sure.
So yeah. You have less than seconds to make a decision. And if somebody is pulling a gun out at an officer, you cannot possibly take the time to use less than lethal before you use lethal force. This is impossible. And I know that you want to talk more about what this does, and I think you should, but I'm so passionate about this that I have to say every officer in the state of California needs to walk off their job if they pass this, because they will be in imminent danger every day of their life.
Well, look at our son, who works on the Central Coast in California, and he works in such a violent city. You know, this town, I'm not going to name it, I don't want to get the poor kid in trouble, but they have a population that is less than one-third of the population of Anaheim, California, yet over the years they've had three times the number of officer-involved shootings as the city of Anaheim, okay? And my kid, our kid, is right in the middle of this, and I worry about that young man I talk to him every single day. Watch people's hands. My God, you know, look around you. Have situational awareness. Please be safe. And you know, I call him every single day. Okay, maybe I pester him, but I call him every single day. And, you know, we keep trying to get him out to Texas, but I'll tell you, Linda, you're exactly right. If they pass this law, police officers in California ought to get out while the getting's good, okay?
Yeah, I mean, all I can say is, how dare they do this to our police officers? And by the way, they are then making you, the citizen, way less safe, because if there is a man with a gun there, and that officer has to use less than lethal force, and there are other people in that line of fire, they're all in danger as well. That is the whole entire point of what a police officer does, is to save the public, to work on their behalf. And they are taking all the tools away to make the citizens safer and the police officers safer.
Okay, and so just to prove points that we've talked about here on many coffee conversations, it's this rich ruling elite, politicians that we have all over the United States and especially in California. So before this committee voted on this AB 392, they had, you know, people come public, you know, meeting, pro and con. Well, the con people, the people against 392, guess what? They're all the families of law enforcement and law enforcement officers, but the families of law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty. And they begged this committee, don't do this. This is not a well thought out bill. don't make this a law because we are going to lose more officers in the state of California. What do you think they did? Oh, thank you for your concern. And they went overhead and they passed that bill through their committee.
See, their political correctness is going to kill people.
But it's not going to kill
officers and citizens.
But it's not going to kill them.
Well, you never know. It possibly could because they could be the victim of a crime just like anybody else. They could be the victim of these people that they're taking out of prison left and right over there. And, California is honestly going to hell in a handbasket. And I don't know why they are doing this to that state.
Well, I'll tell you what. Can you tell we're passionate about this?
I'm very passionate about this. So I need to move off of this. And I want to talk about something a little bit more fun.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. So, we're kind of new to the whole Midwest area, right? I don't even know. Are we really in the Midwest?
Well, we're sort of, Texas is, let's just say that we're a flyover state, okay?
Okay.
Let's say that. But we're in central time, so I guess we're sort of in the Midwest.
Yeah, so, okay.
But we're not Nebraska, okay? We're not Iowa, we're not Nebraska, we're not Indiana,
Those must be the
rural. We're not Oklahoma, but we're right below.
Well, we're right next to
it. But we're right next to it, and our bulls are there, so.
there are some things that are different about living in the Midwest.
Yes.
Than living on the left and the right coast. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I absolutely do. We saw it as soon as we moved out here, and actually that's one of the reasons we moved out here.
Well, so if you happen to live in the Midwest, there's probably some quirks that you have that you need to just be aware of, things that people in the Midwest do.
So are you saying that you're going to give us some tips on how you know someone is from the Midwest?
That's what I'm going to do.
Outstanding. Let's hear them.
Well, you measure distance in hours. So you don't say, I'm going to go, 40 miles here or there. You say, it's about 20 minutes away, or it's, and you know what?
That's true. Look how we changed, because when we lived in California, you 20 minutes away could have been two blocks, okay,
yeah,
with the commute traffic.
Yeah, that's true. So they gauge distance by time rather than miles.
That's really true.
Now you drive everywhere.
Yes.
But you can't parallel park.
So that's your problem, Linda, not mine.
So just speaking of quirks, I always complain at you about your driving, but you are the best parallel parker I've ever seen.
I don't care how small that spot is. I'm going to get that Ford F-150 right in there.
Get it right in there. They want to parallel park, seriously, an inch, from each other. Another thing that Midwesterners do is they don't mind traveling in the car for days. And I totally agree. I love road trips.
You know what? That is really interesting about you, because when we get in that RV, man, you are good to go, okay? And you know what? Truth be told, you do the majority of the driving between the two of us.
Yeah, well, there we're talking about your driving again. I don't know.
Which is probably why.
It's, I love looking at the scenery. That's a pretty dry drive, usually, because we take the 10 and go
straight
here to California, just because we have businesses in both states. But
I think if we took the 40, I think it'd be a more fun drive, don't you think?
I don't know. I've never done that.
No, I've done it twice.
But anyway, I do love road trips, and I love to see the scenery, and I love to see nature things. I don't like road trips going through cities at all. I don't like to see buildings and cement and roads and road construction and all that stuff. But anyway, another thing that Midwesterners do, which we found is really, really true, is you say hi to everybody. Like when you're walking, everybody waves. When you're driving, when you're walking, everybody says hello and everybody waves.
And we see that a lot here, and we do it. And it's fun to do it. It's just fun to leave that tense environment of California, where there's a lot of people that just purely aren't friendly, and come out here and everybody greets you and they'll wave to you in, like where we live. That happens all the time. And I just love it, and I wave right back.
Yeah. And another thing that Midwesterners do is they have a hard time saying goodbye. So if you want to leave somebody's house around 10 o'clock, you should start saying goodbye about 9:15 so that you can, get the long, goodbye and conversation and everything. And also they tend to apologize a lot. They'll apologize for anything. If somebody, and this is so true, if somebody bumps into me at the grocery store, they stop and apologize.
I see that all the time. And you know what? Let me add something to that we thought was just really Nice. People out here and in the Midwest, they have good manners, you know, and especially people in the South have got good Southern manners, and they say, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, no, ma'am, you know, yeah, no, sir, yeah. And they will hold doors open for you. That, you know, they're very chivalrous around here, and it's just so nice when you're getting treated with respect, and it's young kids all the way up to older people.
Yes, and that's really one of the things on the list too, is that they're much more inclined to do something for you than other places. Another thing is, it's kind of a funny one, where they secretly judge people by their lawn. So they look to see if their lawn is nice and green, or is it dead and full of, you know, brush and leaves and things. They like to see nice green lawns.
Well, you know what? When you and I drive around out here, we always talk about, you know, the nice landscaping in people's houses. Oh, that looks really cool. Wow, why don't we do something like that?
Yeah.
You know, but and so I think, I don't know if it's an envious thing. I think people just like to see beautiful landscaping.
Well, I think so,
I wouldn't
too.
Judge my neighbor by that.
No. Well, I would rather see a green area than I would rather see just dirt on somebody's property. But when we bought in Texas, we didn't have a nice front of our property.
No, we had to build all of that.
And so we did put some grass in, and it just, you know what, it makes me happier to come home to.
That's true. But you know what, Linda, truth be told, I probably would think twice about my neighbor if they parked 14 cars on their front lawn or their front patch of dirt like we used to see in California. Well, then I'm going to be a little bit biased.
That's true. Another thing that they do in the Midwest is they know how to layer. So they layer their clothes all the time. And I find myself just starting to do that, which I've never done in my life, having been born and raised in California. But when you live in this climate, it can be in the 40s at night and 90 in the day. So you have to be prepared for that change. And I always say that the weather's kind of schizophrenic out here because it changes really every day.
Well, you know what they say out in the Midwest? If you don't like the weather now, wait 20 minutes and it'll change.
Well, that's true.
And you remember, California was so boring, you'd get the same weather for 2 or 3 months in a row.
Yep. You know, another thing that is different here than where we grew up, is different in the Midwest, is they like their county fairs. And they like their, I know in the town that we live in, there's something going on literally almost every weekend. Some sort of a street fair or old cars or
festival,
westernness,
beer,
or
a beer
rodeo.
Exactly.
Yeah, they had a big beer fest. We missed it.
Yeah.
But they have all those kinds of festivals. And you know what? People really, really flock to them.
Well, you know, out here, I just see things so much more family-oriented. And
yeah,
you just see a lot more families, a lot more kids here, and a lot more parents being engaged with their kids. And I just love that, you know. And I love the fact that half of our family's here with us. Remember, we just went out to dinner the other night with our daughter and son-in-law.
Which is why you have carrot cake.
That's exactly right. And you know what? I love that. And you know what? Tomorrow night we're gonna do a fish boil and have crawdads and shrimp and sausage and just do the whole thing. The corn, and I'm telling you what, I'm going to do all the cooking, going to have a tri-tip, and I just love all of that stuff.
Yeah, we have all the kids come over and sit out on the porch and enjoy the springtime and
exactly.
A warm evening.
And that's what family's about.
And this article says that people live for fall, which they, you know, I agree, the fall is equally as beautiful as the summer out here, but I just love the spring when everything pops open and starts blooming. It's just so beautiful.
You know, I'm with you. And you know, Karen, our daughter Karen, and I had to go do some work yesterday, and we drove over to our firearms expert's place in our gun range, and we crossed the Guadalupe River twice. Now, we got the Guadalupe River right in our backyard, but the people where we crossed were already starting to tube. So that means that the water's starting to warm up already, and we know it's starting to warm up here, and I'm looking forward to kayaking and tubing.
Yep. Well, I'm thinking about going down the river and doing a little fishing this weekend because our son just caught some nice bass right behind the house.
Oh, so, I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah. So another thing that is different than growing up on the coast is casseroles become your favorite food. And that's probably true. There's so many different kinds of casseroles out here. And they do a lot of cheese in the Midwest, too, so they really like their cheese. And, you know, that's fine with me because I like it, too.
Cheese is a food group, right?
Yeah. They do have an awful lot of fried food out here, so I'm not sure. And they drink a lot of soda out here, too. Those are not things that I've come to adjust to yet. Anyway, so they have a couple of odd things with desserts out here. They have Superman flavor, which is vanilla colored three different ways. So you just take your vanilla ice cream and you color it with food coloring three different ways and
that's
put it in the bowl.
Weird.
I know that's kind of interesting. Now, this one is absolutely true. You don't swim in the ocean because we don't have one.
Right.
Well, we do have one in Texas, but not near us. You go to the lake. And there's lakes everywhere in the Midwest. And it is so fun to just get out and jump in the lake. And like you say, you can kayak or canoe or fish or do whatever you want. But the lakes are really fun. Going to the malls is a big deal. And our malls here are crazy crowded. So,
But I think that's because, especially during the summertime, it gets pretty hot out here.
Yeah.
And everybody goes to the mall and kind of escape. And that's really, it's air conditioned, and that's where you meet your friends and, you know, your neighbors and everything. And everybody kind of gets together, and you can get a little bite to eat or something to drink and do some shopping and have a good time. So the malls, a little bit, are kind of going away, like in the state of California, but out here they're fairly strong.
Yeah. And people swear that they don't have an accent, but they really do.
Oh, yeah, they do.
So, anyway, we are enjoying living. I don't know if we're in the Midwest, like I said, but we're somewhere in the vicinity. And I think it's the same kind of people. It feels like the same kind of people. And I'm loving it. And the fact that you and I can sit on our porch in the evening and just have our talk together like this is, I just love that so much.
Well, you know, We spent a lot of time designing this screened-in porch and getting the patio furniture in out here and getting it, you know, the lighting and the, you know, all the cool stuff that we did here. And that's because we knew that when the good seasons of the year come out, this is where we live. We live out here in this covered porch, and it's so much fun.
Well, you know what's funny is a little squirrel decided to join us out here.
Oh, I know.
And he chewed right through our screen.
Well, I moved all the food sources, so hopefully that's the end of that. And you know what other room I love in our house?
The bedroom, because you're ready to go to bed, aren't you?
That's right, young lady, okay?
Okay, I'll meet you there.
Meet you there.